Good morning. Hello. Happy Tuesday. Happy Sens game day. This is Sean Simpson. How are you doing this morning, Simmer?
I'm good, Jer. Knowing that tomorrow the countdown's on, 2 weeks till the days start getting longer, and with this beautiful weather of not being super cold, we're already going to turn the corner without even feeling any winter. So how can that put you in a good mood and not put you in a good mood?
Well, I don't know. If you're a skier, maybe you're not feeling great about it.
Well, they got machines now. They're making all that bad boy high up in the mountains. In the low valley here, whole different world.
Yeah. I don't know that they're making. I don't think they're making snow yet. I don't know of anybody. I haven't heard of anybody. I'll go out and ask Chris Holsky. He's a huge skier.
Yeah, it's interesting because we did the Tromelon event for many years, and it would have been.
It's always this weekend.
Well,
right?
Yeah. So, and again, it was always where they had the snow up and running, obviously, most of it man-made. But the last year, or at least the last couple of years, right down at the foot of the mountain, you saw a whole lot of mud. So, I don't know if they'd end up having. I would assume they'd have one run going, and they actually had the event back, so. You're going to have a 24-hour ski event. Better have some snow. That could be tough on the skis.
That does help. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Go over the rocks and everything.
One of the things I love about skiing is snow.
Yes, I agree with that. I was reading last night, by the way, that this past weekend, the World Cup ski season always begins at Lake Louise out in Alberta. Yeah. And I went through the entire story. It's written by Scott Russell, who's been, the guy that hosts the Olympics.
Absolutely.
On CBC forever.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, great. And he's big-time skier. And he was lamenting the fact that, in all likelihood, this was going to be the last time they raced at Lake Louise. And throughout the entire thing, and he was waxing eloquent about, how popular it is with all the skiers and everything. And through the I had to go back a second time and kind of comb through it and to ask the question, why is this the last year they're having it at Lake Louise? Yeah. And it was never answered in the article.
Okay.
And I had meant to go and look somewhere else as into, I don't know, is it an economic thing? Is it the fact of there's not enough snow, whatever? But inside the article, they were saying that they are actually going to move some of the events to Tremblant next year. So there's actually going to be World Cup races at Tremblant.
Wow.
Now, not a downhill, because I don't think it's long enough and big enough.
Yeah.
But there is the article did say there's a Super G. So for all the skiers out there that want to see the best in the world, they're coming to Tremblant, apparently, next year.
I thought the Super G was longer than the downhill, Jared. It's the opposite?
Well, I think I think, I don't know if the pitch is
Deep
enough,
okay.
I'll put it that way.
No. And I guess you could. Is it? What is the Canadian skiers and Mark guy, or who is the moguls or freestyle skier, or from Ottawa here? Did we not have a skier? Anyways, I'm missing up. But anyways, I know he.
No, that's, we're not talking that. I'm talking like down, like him. I'm not talking about freestyle skiing.
No, I know. I'm trying to think of the mogul skiers or kind of doing that as well. Whether they'd have an event, but I bet it's economics, Jer, because traveling around, and you're right with snow. But I know in Europe, to your point, though, some of the longer events, and I thought it was the one that was longer than the downhill, it's been canceled for many years. You show a lot of those mountaintops through Europe and through the Swiss and French Alps areas. That all end up being just dry. It's just bone dry up there. There's no more snow. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to kind of find out why, and that's unfortunate. And, hey, good for Tremblant. That's pretty cool they could hold an event like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, for all the skiers out there, next year, apparently, that's coming.
Yeah.
All right.
Do I hear a little frog in your throat, young man?
Yeah. I'm not blaming my wife was sick for all of last week, starting on Wednesday, like really sick. And I dodged that bullet.
Whoa, see, that's what
happened. I had the cloves of garlic going.
You jinxed it.
Well, what do you mean I jinxed it?
Well, because you talked about it before, and like, I got her. She getting me.
No, I never said that. I briefly touched on the fact that she was really sick, and I thought by the time Sunday rolled around, she was finally feeling better, that, okay, I've done it. And then I think I started feeling it Sunday night. Yesterday was so-so. Today, the voice is definitely raspy. So I took one of those Benadryl things last night before I went to bed because my ears were starting to close up a little bit. That feeling?
Yeah.
Boy, does those things knock you out. I mean, I woke up this morning and I was in a deep stupor.
Yeah.
So
is this like NyQuil? Is it just like?
Yeah, something that knocks you out.
Well, the Benadryl, I used to take that for the allergies in Maryland. Yeah. And man, you come off of the golf course when it's 1,000 degrees, pop one of those things. It's like, I'm down for the count.
Yes.
There was a chance.
Exactly. So you got to make sure you take the nighttime at night and the daytime during the day.
No, especially if you're working 4 hours of radio. But funny you said that. I had a good work yesterday, took a nice bath and something. I just wasn't feeling great. I was in bed, even though TB was just rocking it on TV. I even went to bed at 8:45. So And this is also, I had a conversation with somebody out of Toronto yesterday, Toronto Radio.
Yes.
We're talking about the World Junior, and she just said, how's the crew up there doing? Anybody getting sick? I'm like, no. I said, our crew, we just power through. She's like, God, there's not a day goes by that we're not having somebody missing. So I don't know if
just
that
10, would... 50 people?
Yeah.
Oh, they're soft.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that would... But now I feel like a curse has been sent our way.
Way to go. So it's Zimmer's fault. Zimmer's fault.
It could be a possibility. Anyway. But hey, let's face facts here. Around society right now, I'm sure we talk an awful lot about Chio, which we should when it comes to children, but there's a lot of stuff cruising around, and I guess not surprising that we're entering into that time of the year.
Phil in Edmonton just texted in and said, boys, it's minus 27 here this morning
awesome.
In Edmonton.
Congratulations.
So. good for you. I did see a cutaway. I watched a little bit of the Calgary game last night. Did the cutaway when they go to commercial or whatever, and it showed snow on the ground in Calgary. So
yeah.
I think it's been pretty... And there's a woman at work, actually, who I was on a call yesterday with her, and she's visiting family in northern Alberta, like 2 hours north of Edmonton, whatever up there. And she was saying it was minus 35.
Well, I know who that is. I won't say her name, but she's in Cold Lake, Alberta. So there has to be something military-related, generally, Chair.
Yes, that's correct.
That is one of the bases. And having a father in the military, you're familiar with all those at the time. I always remember the shots of Montreal when it comes to Hockey Night in Canada, and also my good friend Anthony Bourdain. That super cold where there's just kind of a... any building that has any exhaust coming out, you can see it because it's so cold. It just makes it look colder, right? It's kind of rising up, and you're feeling it. Now, I assume, you're the weather expert, the polar vortex must not be in place at this point, right? Because this cold air, I guess, is blowing way north of us, where once the vortex lines up, and you talk about that northwest wind cruising in, obviously we have not picked up any of the polar vortex yet from the out west, because they've had terrible weather. And we're sitting here in a tropical...
paradise, all the way up to 2 degrees today. Wow. Well,
that's okay.
Awesome.
Oh, it is. It is, though. I'll be honest with you. I don't have a problem with that at all. Like, even going to the gym there, I don't like to go in the change room at the gym. I like to just go and do my workout and come home. I'm 2 minutes away, so you come out and you're a little sweaty and it could be a little on the cold side. So far it's been like, man, this isn't bad at all. So that's
you arrive to the gym in your gym clothes and you leave the gym in your gym clothes.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with you other funky monkeys. No thank you.
No, I'm staying away. No,
it must be
What's that?
It must be an interesting car seat after you leave that.
That's a great question. It doesn't appear to have picked up anything too bad.
You never smell yourself. You don't notice yourself.
No, most of my gym clothes is at that point. Like, I'm not quite like Soviet Union stinky. We used to play those guys in warm-up, and I still never forget this. The end of my junior year in 85-86. I went with Dave King and the national team, and we cruised around Northern Ontario playing the Russians. And I think not only during the warm-up could we, but the entire crowd would get a whiff of their clothes that had not been washed. Like, literally, JR, they would hang everything up, including their long underwear underneath. And you know how that third or fourth day of sweating in that kind of stuff, the stench that can be on there, it was not pretty.
That's part of the game plan. Right?
That's a good point by you.
Smell so much, keep the opposition away.
That's a good point.
Soviets were always way ahead of us on all this stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Psychological warfare.
Yes,
hey, that's a great point by you.
All right, 6:20. We got lots to get to on this Tuesday. A busy night across the NHL last night, including a crazy game between the Habs and the Canucks out in Vancouver that went all the way to overtime. Big leads blown, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, go through all of that and all the hockey stuff. Of course, get you set for Sens and Kings. We'll get you updated on the Sens injury front, including some bad news on Artem Zub. So we'll go through all of that. Monday Night Football, yes, Tom Brady does it again in a huge comeback as the Buccaneers beat the Saints late. So we got that. Some baseball. Looks like baseball free agency has begun. We had a big signing on the weekend with Jacob DeGrom and two huge signings yesterday. Blue Jays going to do anything? All right, so we'll have that for you as well. We got tons of winning today as well, including tickets to Sens Super Skills. That's on the way. That's coming up, by the way, in early January. We'll have a pair of tickets to the best women's hockey players in the world are in Ottawa this weekend for a big All-Star weekend at Canadian Tire Center. So we've got a pair of weekend passes to that. And we'll play Sens or Sensibility for a chance to see the Sens and the Habs next week at Canadian Tire Center. So lots straight ahead. Mike Johnson is our TSN Hockey Insider. He will join us after 8. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 625 on this Tuesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. We got some texts rolling in at 12-1200. Josh writes, are we going to hear J.R. losing his voice 2.0?
I think I worked I think I worked a day with my voice like this before. Significant snow is on the way. A strengthening. I think I'm getting a little bit better. No. I thought I was better there.
And that was it. That was it. I shut her down. That was the maybe the only time I've left the show in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I actually came in from the bullpen.
Yes.
I actually laid on my bed in South Rockcliffe and came down and worked the rest of the show.
Yeah, and appreciate that.
Yeah, but you do. It is funny. I had a couple of times with Ian where, you know, typical to anything else, the way you're talking to somebody off air, everything appears to be fine. Now, I will say this. Hammer knows you so well. I wasn't picking up that the voice was bad. I was picking up that my ski story was terrible and that you were just shutting me down, to be honest with you. Because I thought you'd jump right on. I thought there was a skier from Ottawa.
Well, I didn't get the whole moguls angle. That's where you lost me a little.
Well, the front part of the hill in Tromblon as you come down is super steep. And it's probably not even long enough, but I just looked at it. And not that I've ever skied in my life. But, yeah, I didn't. And I've always heard the Tromblon, as you said, Jared. I guess one of the tougher trails, but you think to yourself when you're talking about Whistler or Banff or even Mont Saint Anne, I'm a little surprised that they end up going to Tromblon, but good for them.
Yeah, well, it's probably all about what are you willing to do for us to bring our magnificent event, this case, the World Ski Championship.
And I got to think for most of that's European-based, as you kind of pointed out, I have no idea about the economics and popularity. I can only go back to the crazy Canucks and how they had to travel around in their own car around Europe and were always borrowing equipment from everybody else back in the day, right? They didn't have any real funding compared to the big European teams.
Well, I shouldn't say the top people are getting funding. You're carded, right? You're carded at a certain level, like an A athlete, a B athlete, depending on where you're at. That's the amount of money you get. I've told the story before about a friend of mine whose daughter, she was a very good, and I don't remember what kind of freestyle skiing it was, you know, whether it was moguls or whatever, but, you know, was close to Olympic level, like making an Olympic team, but not quite there. And essentially he had to bank, you know, she obviously was in competitions across Europe or whatever. He had to bankroll her every year to the tune of like $40,000, something like that. Yeah, it's...
That doesn't even get you in the big chalet with the other people.
But this is, you know, this is a person who is, you know, maybe a person removed from making the Olympic team and essentially had to pay their own way.
And I guess how TV's kind of shaped and changed, Jared, maybe it is the same, but it felt like growing up, and part of it was a little bit of Wide World of Sports, but a big part of it, I think, was CBC and CTV. It felt like we had a lot more of the ski competitions on TV back in the 80s, did it not?
For sure. Yeah, that was a staple, right? Every Saturday morning, you'd wake up and they'd be on the Hahnenkamm in Austria or wherever it was. Yeah, so love the Hahnen. Never remember forget the name in Kitzbühel of the Hahnenkamm.
Well, and that's where you became, you know, familiar with Innsbruck and all these different countries around. And it was even back to the 88 Olympics and the feature of a lot of the skiers, including the Italian fellow. Was it Alberto Tomba?
Mm-hmm. You know, so Tomba La Bamba.
Yeah.
Popular with the ladies.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. All right, 6:29. I'll talk about the Sens-Kings game coming up and the latest on Artem Zub, but let's go through a bit of the NHL from last night, including the craziest game, which was the last game of the night, faced off in Vancouver at 10:30. And you thought by the time the first period ended, if you're a Habs fan, well, we got that one in the bag. 4-0. Montreal led the reeling Vancouver Canucks after the first period. Vancouver came all the way back to lead 5-4 in the third. Then Montreal scored two goals late in the third. They went ahead 6-5. Then Vancouver tied it with the goalie out on the power play in the final 2 minutes. So let's take you to early overtime to game tied at 6.
It's a scramble draw, goes to the far boards. Caulfield plays it back into his own end for Matheson, and the Canadians start with possession. Matheson fell on the forecheck. Pettersson might have got his stick in there, but now here's Pettersson to the goal. He scores! Elias Pettersson ends a wild night tonight in Vancouver as the Canucks score their seventh of the game just 13 seconds into overtime.
There you go. There's your game winner from Elias Pettersson. 13 seconds into OT. You can make the final 7-6. We just had a 9-8 game involving LA and Seattle. Was that a week ago or two? Whatever it was.
Yeah, not long ago. Yeah,
now we got a 7-6 game. I mean, the scoring, not across the board, because there were some 3-2 games last night, but there have been some wild games so far this year, and that one certainly is on the top five list.
Yeah, it's one of the effects of the West Coast offense installed by Joe Walsh back in the day, or not Joe Walsh, he's a singer.
Yeah, Bill.
Close. But it is kind of neat to see where, when I think about 7-6 hockey games in Vancouver, it always involved Wayne Gretzky. It probably wasn't even 7-6 year. It was probably more like 12-3. Yeah. But no, it's a lot of offense. And I did wonder from a Montreal perspective, first of all, not the hardest checking forward group, but when you look at they have in the back end and in goal, I assumed at some point this was going to kind of turn the other way, and they were going to have a real struggle here keeping pucks out of their net. And last night, the goaltender was pretty stinky as well. I think there was a sequence where I think the like four or five shots in a row, both sides went in. Wasn't a whole lot of offense.
Yeah, and listen, I think Montreal overall record wise is better than most people suspected that they would be. Although when you kind of look at their team, and yes, they are, well, whether it's a retool or a rebuild, they still have a lot of veteran players. You know, they have a lot of guys who played a lot of games in the National Hockey League. So it's not like this is a stripped-down Arizona Coyotes team. Like, there is some talent on that team. So it was going to be hard to judge what kind of year that they would have. Yeah. Record-wise, they were good. Their underlying numbers are not very good at all and suggest that, you know, maybe they're starting to regress here a little bit. And, they put too many points in the bank that they're not going to fall to last overall. But they are starting to tumble down the standings a little bit.
No, it'll be really interesting, Jer, and pointed out kind of the Gorton plan in New York and how that played out. And we've been well documented on the drafting. I look at a few things. Slafkovský in the lineup. Now, he played about 15 minutes last night, but still, where is that trending to? Very interested to see if he goes to the World Junior. I have not seen any word on that. But what's also good or bad is the fact of their best three players, hands down, are Suzuki, Caulfield, and so far Doc has been good. It's not like any of those veteran players or any. I know even Sean Monahan's been talked about, especially by Pooley. They're not really getting much of a contribution out of the majority of those guys. And then you look to the back end. So, yeah, it'll be neat to see how they turn this over. And at the same time, hey, if you draft real well, history shows you. But I would have thought for sure the goal is the organization, the way they set this up, was to get a top five pick, like to get a difference maker, which maybe with the depth of this draft, maybe top 10's fine anyway.
Did you see the game-winning goal, the visual?
No, I have not.
Yeah, so I had wondered. I've seen it a couple of times. I haven't looked for any reaction to it. I just wondered Montreal fans had an issue because Pettersson comes in. It's Mike Matheson, and he's just kind of winding up in front of his own net, and he's sort of skating away from Pettersson. And Pettersson definitely gives him a hack right across the hip. I thought for a minute maybe his stick got down around his feet, but he falls. Okay. And, you know, whether the hack did that or whether he just kind of slipped on his own, not quite sure. But the puck was immediately turned over. And usually, you know, referees will look at something, and if it's an immediate turnover, which creates a scoring chance, which this did.
Especially at 3-on-3, right?
Yeah, and it involves, you know, a player getting a stick parallel to the ice. There's no doubt the stick is parallel to the ice, and he does make contact. Now, whether Matheson slipped on his own or, again, the stick tap helped all that, I'm not quite sure, but I was looking for some reaction on that.
I think reaction for the Montreal fan base. At 1 a.m, the majority of them are taking aim at Carey Price right now.
So that not literally, figuratively.
Well, exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, but that appears to be
to the point where Montreal put out a statement. The Habs put out a statement last night, right?
He didn't look great, not knowing the anniversary, what had happened at the University of Montreal 33 years ago. The fact it was the anniversary of it and everything else. So it's
to the point where this became actually a topic last night. My kids were like. How could you live and work in a city for as long as Carey Price did? And this anniversary is the anniversary itself, December 6th. Mm-hmm. And we're all aware, most of us apparently are aware of the story. My kid's point was, how could you work in the city where this is marked every single year? It's such a tragic event, tragic anniversary, and not be aware of that.
Yeah.
Not know about the event itself. I totally see not remembering the date, okay? No, nobody's as wired in on numbers sometimes as other people. But not being aware of the actual event itself, that was not, as you said, not a good look.
Yeah, I mean, and you wouldn't compare Bernier thinking that Mandela played for the Raptors, but or however that played out with the Leafs back in the day. But something like this, I know it sounds funny, and I know they're really on top of it in Montreal, even from a PR standpoint, JR, just in educating people, of making people aware, and I totally agree with you, And also when you have a young family from a schooling standpoint, although his kids are super young, but yeah, it just the timing of it was not a good look whatsoever. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that is the that maybe end up right now is the bigger story in Montreal than the wins and losses. And last night on the loss ledger, 7-6 to Vancouver in a crazy game. Couple games out in Alberta. Calgary survives Arizona 3-2. Got a late goal from Nazem Kadri. The Coyotes are finishing up. They got one more game in Edmonton tomorrow, and then they're finished a 14-game road trip. We all talked about the Islanders last year while they were waiting for their building to be built, starting the season on the road. And I believe, did they play 13 in a row to start the season?
I'm not sure, JR, but it was a lot.
Yeah. And
it was the season was pretty much over by the time they got home.
Well, and then they got COVID.
That was because of expectations, right?
On the island?
Well, the island last year had expectations to do well, where Arizona didn't have anything coming into the year.
Anyway, they started the season with 6 on the road, then went home for 4, and now they've been on the road again for 14. Like, an incredibly difficult thing. And, you know, they haven't won a lot of games, talking about Arizona lately, but boy, are they competitive every single night. Like, they played in, again, their 13th straight game on the road. They had played the day before in Winnipeg, and they played Calgary to an even game, other than Kadri scoring, you know, late in the third period to win the game for the Flames. So I tell you what, hats off to Andre Tourney. He doesn't have a lot to work with.
No,
he has not had a favorable schedule. Like nothing has been laid out very easily for him and the team. And you know, they're competitive. I'll put it that way. Well, they're going to be near the bottom of the standings, but they're competitive every night.
Yeah, and it was fun getting to know him and not know him personally, but with the 67th of the World Junior. When he worked with Ottawa, you know, pretty anonymous other than the name, but the leadership capability, and a little bit funny when he came to Ottawa and the broken English, but his ability to rally a group, and it probably was even more evident, and it was evident in the play of the 67th chair, but it was with the World Junior, just hearing him talk. And the tough part for him is that Arizona's not even really at their transitional stage, right? We talk about Montreal, and certainly they've gotten rid of most of their players, but it's not like you're in an Ottawa spot, right, where you've turned the corner and all these good young prospects are in. Like, you're kind of pulling along with a bunch of guys that won't be on the roster a year from now. But that's what he's able to do. He's able to really build a real good bond, some real good team aspects. And yeah, as you said, that's all you can ask. You're not going to score a lot. They've only scored 61 goals so far this year, and that's to be expected based on that lineup. But you just hope that they'll show up every day, and that's a sign of a good coach.
All right, so Arizona loses in Calgary. They're in Edmonton tomorrow. The Oilers coming off a 3-2 loss to Washington last night. Nick Dowd had the game winner in that one. Connor McDavid had a shorthanded goal. They're starting to use him on the penalty kill now, which, well, if they're not dialing other parts of his game back, puts him up. He's already gets more ice time than anybody else in terms of forwards in the National Hockey League, and now they're adding the PK to the resume. And it makes sense. Right, Connor McDavid is an absolute. Well, he's the most skilled player in the NHL, so it makes sense to use him as much as you just. I always just wonder with, and he appears to have endless energy, so I guess it does make sense. But you have to wonder, and yet you know, it's kind of like the Thomas Chabot debate here, right? Yeah. Good hockey player, but there does reach a point where he plays too much to his own to the detriment of the player.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and it's a funny debate because a couple of years ago this came up with Matthews and Marner. And people also talked about, well, I don't want my best players on the PK. They're going to get hurt blocking shots. I never looked at it that way, JR. It was just the minutes that you accumulate. And also, from a coaching standpoint, you get into a rhythm of playing these guys so much. Well, of course you do, because they're good. And then we really saw, in particular with Marner, that was the year they lost out to Montreal, where he just didn't have anything left. Like, people were, like, faulting his effort. I'm like, listen, watch this guy. The legs are gone. Like, he'd go to, remember he couldn't shoot the puck on the power play? Like, he was zapped. And it's such a fine line for the coaches now, because part of their mentality is, well, yeah, you can talk about the playoffs all you want. I need to get there. And for a team that's struggled defensively, and goaltending, at least in the case of Jack Campbell, hasn't been great. Yeah, it's hard to resist, and especially if the athlete's willing to do it, and a guy like Connor McDavid.
All right, among the other games, a real nice matchup in Boston where the Bruins were 14 in a row at home, 14 wins in 14 games, and, of course, top of the NHL standings. And last night, Vegas Golden Knights in town. And of course, that was the return of Bruce Cassidy for the first time. And the Knights have been playing some good hockey as well. They gave him a nice ovation. He was clearly moved by all of that. But, you know, what would make him feel even better is a win. Vegas got up 3-0. Bruins came back to tie at 3-3. They went through overtime. Let's take you to round 5 of the shootout.
Here's Riley Smith. He'll wheel his way in. Cuts it to the slot. Angles right. Now back to the middle. Shoots. He scores! Riley Smith finds the back of the net. And the Vegas Golden Knights knock off the Bruins in the shootout, 4-3. The first time the Bruins have lost a game on home ice all season long.
There you go. And Bruce Cassidy looked pretty happy behind the bench as he was shaking hands with his assistants and waving to people in the stands as he made his way out of the TD Bank North Garden.
Yeah, and you could imagine, you know, deep down, you're a proud guy. A lot of that pointed to Cam Neely, probably a little bit to Don Sweeney, and just from a family aspect. But the tough part for Butchie, and I've lived it a tad working with the Cats for a long time, JR, you think you're going to be somewhere. In the case of Butchie, he is a Boston fan. Bobby Orr was his guy. I know he has a great life in Vegas, and he's making great money, and he's living in a nice place. But I would assume if you've gone to work for an Original Six club, you've taken them to a Stanley Cup final, Game 7, you've had such a good run there, there's still some emotion of thinking, hey, Vegas is awesome, but it's not quite the same as coaching an Original Six hockey team. So great emotion there, and like we've pointed out many times, both friends of the show, it's just been a great story for both Butchie and Monty on the way this season. I thought it was also really classy that Patrice Bergeron was waiting outside the dressing room to talk to Butchie after, and you know, just the way you handle certain things. And like I say, it's been a win-win, but I'm sure he still looks and realizes, man, big part of my heart is coaching the Boston Bruins and being part of the Original Six franchise.
And it's been interesting. Jim Montgomery has said, you know, like what's the – and the Bruins, you know, the key to the Bruins this year has been, well, a lot of things. Just playing great hockey, but they're scoring more goals. And he has said, the reason they're playing great hockey is a testament to the foundation that Bruce Cassidy put in defensively with the Bruins.
Yeah.
Like Jim Montgomery said, I don't have to teach them, one thing defensively, how to play the game, right? All I did was kind of change some things on the offensive side of things. The defensive thing is already set, and that's the reason the Bruins are playing such great hockey.
Well, yeah, and how many defensemen, and this is really the testament, and I think it's Kevin Dean that was coaching with Butchie before. Yeah, Joe Sacco. How many guys did they bring through, JR, that were super average defensemen and would turn them all of a sudden into players? So that's both in teaching and tactical, and it is a nice carryover, and it's nice to Monty to give some credit right there. And you also have the carryover of Patrice Bergeron, and if we're being completely honest, the reason that Butchie was gone, that unfortunately the grind of, and he has a lot of Mike Keenan and Daryl Sutter in him, and there was just too much of that going on, at least for the group were kind of the thought. And I think Patrice Bergeron must have had a bit of a play, not in a negative way, but once in a while he just realized, hey, this is going to be hard to sustain when we're grinding so hard. And what's also, I think, a bit funny is that it was actually Butchie that brought in the better offensive system or a little more up-tempo when he took over for Claude Julien. That was the whole mandate then was, well, they've kind of opened it up, and I always found that interesting. Now Monty comes in, and he's opened it up for Butchie. So
turn the taps, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn the taps. So 4-3 is the final. Vegas beats Boston. Sens are hosting the Kings tonight, trying to make it three straight wins. Of course, they won a pair of games on the weekend. Here's Coach DJ Smith on what his group learned from the weekend.
Well, I think they're a resilient group. I think they believe in each other. I think, they understand how we have to play to win, and saying that, we probably give up more chances against San Jose than we have in a while, but goaltending was outstanding. I just, it's a better feel for sure. And it's not about, obviously we're winning more games, but there's just a better feel in the room, and we know exactly what we have to do to win.
All right, so there is DJ Smith, and now you got to follow up with victories.
Yeah.
Now you got to start stacking the wins, because I understand completely what he's saying right there. But we have, not that he said, exactly similar things before, but we have, whenever we've seen a little bit of a note of an uptick, and there's been, and maybe it's just more wishful thinking or hopeful thinking from the fan base and from everybody here wanting the team to do better, and then all of a sudden they'll kind of stall again. This is where you need to, they've won two in a row, they've won 4 or 5, now you know, coach is feeling like they're playing better. There's a better feeling in the room. But now you got to win the games.
Yeah.
Now you got to back it up by winning the games.
Yeah, I guess. But the other part, Jaron, we kind of pointed out, and we break this down so much. Okay, most of the young players that you need playing well are playing well. I don't know realistically for where you're at right now from a depth standpoint up front and on the back end, whether it's sustainable. The way it's sustainable, quite simply to me, if the number one power play rocks and rolls like it did on Saturday, you're good to go. Goaltending, same thing. And I noticed that in the second and third period, they gave up a lot of chances, and also the settling in, because it is a 3-4. So in a fourth, the third game, I understand there's going to be some quality chances, But it's now a Zub out of the lineup, and the realization where you played in New York Friday and it's Saturday, you know, somebody else hops in, you're okay, you're good to go. Now you settled in with the realization you're not going to get him back till the new year. What does the group look like? And it's still to the point on the back end with the overall depth that I don't look at this and say, hey, this is going to be 6, 7, 8 in a row. You know, they're in a dogfight every single night, and it'll be very interesting because I think tonight on a Tuesday, you know, my formula, don't see ice hockey games Sunday through Thursday. This in the Anaheim games, I'm interested to see how they perform because it's not as exciting, and this is a real, if you can get this one, you know it'll be fun going into Dallas. Nashville's always fun, but let's see how they react against the Kings tonight with the realization that they are super thin on the back end.
Yeah, the word on Artem Zub. So yesterday, Darren Dreger tweeted out early in the morning that it looked like, or he had heard 2 to 3 weeks, and then coach said after practice it's actually 3 to 4. Yeah, so he has a hair. I don't know if it's a hairline, but it's a fracture of his jaw from the shot he took in the face on Friday night in New York against the Rangers. So Zub is out minimum 3, upwards of 4 weeks. So that essentially eliminates the month of December, and this is a, as we've said, very busy month for the Sens. They got a lot of games stacked in between now and the 31st of the month. So we're going to be missing Artem Zub for the entirety of that, which is, well, again, not deep to begin with on the back end. Now you're taking out one of your top 3D.
Yeah, and then hopefully Shabbat's at a spot where he does that. Zaitsev, the couple of games that he's popped in, has been a little more stable. That'll be kind of the tone setter right there, Jared. And also from the jaw standpoint, it's really interesting. I don't know if this has changed in formula, but back in the day, almost everybody that had a broken jaw, even a hairline fracture, would get the jaw wired. And that for an athlete is obvious that I can't eat no matter how many milkshakes I'm having. So depending what's happened there, which I assume it's not that, it's just getting comfortable. And then we usually see the guys come back with a full mask and the comfort level. But it's also just from a conditioning standpoint. So hopefully it runs smoothly and he's back in the new year.
All right. LA Kings in town tonight at 7 o'clock. Our pregame show begins at 5 here on TSN 1200. Kings, by the way, 5th in the Western Conference, although they played more games than pretty much every other team around the league. So they've stacked up some wins. So the goaltending, though, has been, well, at best, average for LA this year, to the point where Cal Peterson's down in the minors and Jonathan Quick has not been that good either. So opportunity, perhaps, could be a, I don't know if it's going to be a Canucks-Habs game tonight. We might see some, based on the way these teams are playing and injuries, etc., maybe we'll see some goals tonight. May want to look at the over, potentially. All right, 6:48. We'll take a break. When we come back, Tom Brady does it again. Big comeback for the Buccaneers late against the Saints. We'll tell you how he did it, and we'll look back on the day at the World Cup, including Japan losing on penalties against Croatia. Oh, my God. Can anybody make a penalty kick here, Japan? You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. January 8th, Sens are hosting Sens Skills Competition. It is back at Canadian Tire Center, and we'd like to send somebody right now. We got a pair of tickets to that event coming to CTC on January the 8th, if you'd like to go. Text us right now at 12-1200. Just send your first and last name, and we'll take the 30th text through. That'll give everybody an equal chance. Again, standard messaging rates apply. Texas, just your first and last name. Say, I want to go to Send Skills. And we'll choose the 30th person, and that person is off with a pair of tickets. By the way, tickets available through Ticketmaster.ca. Send Skills at Canadian Tire Center, January 8th, high noon, presented by CAA in support of the Senators Community Foundation.
Look at that partnership right there, JR.
Yes.
CAA.
Let's
action.
Go.
Let's go get those tickets.
Let's go get those tickets.
Let's go.
Yeah. All right. And we'll have another pair of tickets, by the way, to give up later on this morning. And as well, it is the season of giving, after all. We've got a pair of weekend passes to the PWHPA, Professional Women's Hockey Players Association All-Star Weekend, coming to Ottawa this weekend at CTC. The very best players. This does not include European-based players, so I should put that little caveat, but let's face it, we think most of the best players are here in North America,
yeah.
Canada, and the United States, including the likes of Marie-Philippe Poulin. Pretty much everybody that was on the Canadian and Olympic women's, U.S. women's Olympic teams are going to be in Ottawa this weekend,
awesome.
Playing both Saturday and Sunday at Canadian Tire Center. Again, tickets through Ticketmaster.ca, and we'll have a pair of weekend passes to go Saturday and Sunday to give up giveaway later on in the show this morning. Okay, 6:55, Monday Night Football. It was a dreadfully bad game. Got to be quite honest with you. A 4-fans-only game between the Saints and the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay could get nothing going all night. The Saints were settling for field goals, and you know what happens when you settle for field goals and don't score touchdowns. Eventually, it comes back and bites you in the backside. Although it didn't look like it was going to happen last night. The Saints are up 16-3 late in the fourth quarter, and then Tom Brady leads the Buccaneers on a 91-yard touchdown drive with 3 minutes to go to make it 16-10, and then they hold the Saints and use their timeout. So only 30 seconds burn off the clock. So the Bucs get the ball back with 2.5 minutes to go. And who doesn't think at that point that despite the struggles all night, that Tom Brady isn't going to do the exact same thing again. So he takes the Buccaneers all the way down. They actually had what they thought was the game-winning touchdown called back because of a holding penalty. So they had to try again. So let's take it to the dying seconds. Again, Bucs down by six. They're at the Saints 6 yard line.
Brady in the gun, flanked by the running back White. Tight end in motion, looks into the nickel. Four man front, Brady back, cocks his arm, a lot of congestion, throws a pass, caught by the rookie running back at the goal line. Spins, dives, touchdown, Rashad White. Touchdown pass by Brady. They've tied the game. 3 seconds to go.
And they would add the extra point to win it 17-16. There's our friend, the overly descriptive Kevin Harlan, with the call, as you heard last night here on TSN 1200. And Brady does it, and he's had trouble with the Saints in his career. The Saints have always had a good defense, but yeah. One of those things that it's sort of like Kansas City with Cincinnati these days. But the Buccaneers found a way to win last night, 17-16, and despite the fact they're 6-6, they're in the driver's seat in the NFC South with a game and a half lead with just 5 games to go in the season.
Yeah, and actually started well yesterday, JR. Great first drive. Had to settle for a field goal. Then after that, hey, you respect that these are two of the better defenses. And for what the Saints are doing defensively, I guess a moral victory. But it's just been crazy in watching Brady and the inability to generate points. But he finds that you're at 6-6. And as far as the Saints, a couple of years ago, the Saints dusted them in both games the year they ended up winning the Super Bowl and actually won in New Orleans, did they not?
They beat them a bunch of games in a row,
and that ended
even before Brady got there.
Yeah, and that ended Drew Brees' career, and that was the end of it there. And to last night, hey, you get to 6-6. What was also funny in the telecast, they were talking about the division, and they did an animated thing of the four quarterbacks who lead their teams. And I'm like, okay, I know where Brady's at in his career, which is still a good thrower with bad mobility, but if you can't beat out Andy Dalton, Mariota, and Sam Darnold, it's not exactly a class crew. So I think after that stinky loss to Cleveland, to come back, and didn't they just win in the last minute about 4 weeks ago as well? Like, this thing, to my point, for them could be well below 500. So 6-6, and you got 5 games left. You're going to host a playoff game at home. Good chance. And I guess you just go from there. But they are what they are.
If you win your division, you do host a playoff game. The trouble for the Buccaneers is going to be, it looks very much like whichever of Philadelphia or Dallas doesn't win the NFC East, that's who the Buccaneers are going to get. Now, they're going to be at home, and they do have Tom Brady, but they're going to get a very tough test.
Would you be nervous? See, Philadelphia for sure. I think that's the real deal. I would kind of, if I'm Tom Brady and for where Dak Prescott has been as a playoff player in Dallas, I would welcome that way more than Philly. That's just me personally. I would think, hey, if it's the Dallas Cowboys, and to me, that'd be fun to watch, but I would fear them a lot less than Philadelphia.
Yeah. I don't know. I've just watched the Bucs enough this year that, and listen, full credit to Brady for doing it last night. He did it. He came back and he won the game. He just does not seem quite the same player that he was. And hey, he's 45 years old. I'm not saying that the shine is completely off, but I don't sit there if I was a fan of the Eagles or the Cowboys and go, wow, we got no shot at Tom Brady.
No.
That's a very winnable game.
No, and you also watch him, and he rolls back. It looks like he's going to stumble every time. I'm assuming as they get Godwin back and healthy and feeling good, offensively they've got the tools. They can still throw the ball. I mean, the question for him at his age is that everyone seems to point out on the broadcast just that the offensive line's not all that great, and they have the worst running offense in the National Football League. Not a great formula when your quarterback can't move very much.
No, exactly. Tom doesn't like it when the rush comes right up the middle, because he likes to stand on his spot, pat the ball a couple of times, and throw it.
Yeah.
And when he doesn't have time, that's when he starts chucking iPads and yelling at people on the sidelines, which he was doing again last night. But they did get the win. All right, 7 o'clock. World Cup continues. Final two, round of 16 games today. Game at 10, and then a game again this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Ronaldo, just freshly from the reports that he's going to be paid $500 million to go finish his career in Saudi Arabia. Anyway, he'll have to wrap his head around playing Switzerland this afternoon in the round of 16. Yesterday, I mean, Brazil just crushed South Korea. They were up 4-0 in the first half and won 4-1. The other game, though, Croatia and Japan was a... Well, I was listening to the broadcast we had. I believe the word tedious was used many times. Was not necessarily a very exciting match, but it did go all the way through 30 minutes of extra time and then through penalty kicks, which did not last as long as they perhaps could have because the Japanese could not score. They missed their first two kicks, got one back. So this is the fourth penalty shot taker for Japan. Again, they've missed two of their first three.
Croatia lead 2-1. Japanese skipper Maya Yoshida with his right foot. Oh, saved again!
Oh, my God.
Livakovic, low to his right, celebrates with both arms in the air. He has saved three of Japan's four penalties. And now the chance for Mario Pasalic to step forward for Croatia and book them a place in the quarterfinals.
There you go. And yeah, he would do that. The checkerboards would go on to win with the penalty kick goal right there. So having three of four, like I'm used as a Dutch soccer fan, they have lost more than their fair share of games on penalties. So I'm used to it. Yeah. I don't ever remember them missing three out of four.
Yeah, and I also, I think the goaltender's gotten better, Jared. The one that he did go left to right there, man, I maybe the guy's not a great kicker, but he just had the arm extended out. I thought, wow. This is almost video game-esque, and I ended up watching a little bit of the South Korea versus Brazil. And when they scored the fourth goal, the poor Korean fan that had the full face paint on, I think in his mind, all he could think of is, I got to get somewhere and wash this off because we're only 25 minutes in. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, man, I feel like such a loser. But it was for Brazil, and man, they weren't stopping the celebrating. And I don't see many times when the coach dances with the players, but... if you want to get some dance lessons, I'd be calling up some of those Brazil players.
Oh, they had the salsa going.
Oh,
absolutely.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah. All right, so again, two final games today. Then it's a couple of off days before we get to the quarterfinals starting on Friday. And, of course, everybody highly anticipating the Saturday match between France and England. All right, just past 7 o'clock, we're at the top of the hour news and sports update. It's a busy Monday night across the NHL, including a wild one in Vancouver between the Habs and the Canucks. It is a Sens game night. The LA Kings in town for a 7 o'clock face-off, a 5 o'clock pregame show. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.